You are Locked On Kings, your daily podcast on the Sacramento Kings.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thursday, May 14th, it is time to continue our 2019-2020 Sacramento Kings performance evaluations. Today, a little bit different than the other ones. I'll explain more in a little bit. Plus, the continuation of our series of the best Sacramento Kings games from every single year from 2010 up to 2020. It is the Locked On Kings podcast, presented by Built Bar. Hello, everybody. Welcome into Locked On Kings, your hub for Sacramento Kings coverage all regular season, all off season. If you're looking for in-depth analysis, game-by-game breakdowns, highlights, interviews with local and national experts, full coverage of the Sacramento Kings from January through December, this is the place for you, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Matt George. I have the privilege of being your host here. I've been a Sacramento sports radio host for over the last 5 years. This is my sixth season, or it was my sixth season, covering the Kings both as an on-air host and a multimedia journalist and reporter. Like I said, today's Sacramento Kings performance evaluation for the 2019-2020 season that was cut abruptly short is a little bit different. We've done players so far. Today, we're doing the head coach, Luke Walton. Is getting evaluated here today, and some of you have been asking for this evaluation. I know a lot of you want to share your thoughts on Luke Walton. He has had a lot of people liking what he's doing. He's had more people not liking what he is doing and how the Kings have really struggled since firing Mike Malone and bringing Luke Walton on. We'll talk about it all. Of course, we'll talk about the injury excuse that the Kings have had this year and how much of a bailout is that, a get-out-of-jail-free card is that for Luke Walton, and how much is it a crutch and an excuse that we're using too much when we shouldn't be. We'll look at it all today. And we're going to start by going back and looking at our expectations for Walton and the Kings at the start of this season. Now, I'll be the first one to say and raise my hand here and say that my expectations were a little over the top. I thought this team was going to be in the high 40s in terms of wins, improving on 39 from the season before. I thought they were going to be definitely competing for an 8th or 7th seed, but maybe even had a chance at the 6th seed. I had a little bit too much confidence in the Sacramento Kings going into this year, and I think a lot of Kings fans and even some Sacramento media members felt the same way just based off of how well the season went in 2018-2019. But looking at Luke Walton specifically and the expectations that were on him coming in, we wanted to see the Sacramento Kings improve, and the best way you can measure improvement is in the win column. So you expected the Kings in some way, shape, or form to pass 39 wins and finally make the playoffs. And a lot of those expectations were not set by the fans. They were set by Vlade Divac. When Vlade fired head coach Dave Yeager, he said in his press conference, this was before hiring Luke Walton, he said in his press conference that he believed Dave took them as far as he could take them. Now they needed someone to come in, pick up where Yeager left off, and ultimately get this team back to where they want to be, which is in the playoffs. So right there, Vlade Divac is saying that whoever he hires has the expectation immediately to build off of Yeager's momentum and get this team into the playoffs. He says somewhat of a similar thing in Luke Walton's introductory press conference. So right away, it is established this team is expected to be in the playoffs this season, even if it's Luke Walton's first season at the helm. Those were the expectations for Luke Walton and for the Sacramento Kings at the beginning of the year. Now let's look at what the expectations are today, because they've changed rather drastically. The expectations turned from making the playoffs and winning more than 39 games to sustainable winning and maybe, if you're lucky, based off of how the West has shaken up this year, maybe sneak into the playoffs. That's a drastic difference from point A to point B. And now we can fill in the blank between those two points as to what happened to change those expectations so drastically. Some of it Walton's fault, a lot of it the Kings' fault, some of it out of their control. Walton's introductory press conference, which was now just over a year ago, He had two specific things that he wanted to focus on that he made known to everybody. Obviously, he wanted this team to make the playoffs. Obviously, he wanted them to improve. He loved how the roster was built so far. Talked a lot about De'Aaron Fox and how far Fox can take the team. But there are two things that he wanted to emphasize. And when I was there at the press conference and Walton said both these things, I actually had a smile on my face. I liked what he was saying. They were the right things to focus on. He said he wanted to focus on defense and three-point shooting. Three-point shooting in the sense of a higher volume, shooting more threes. He put the number at around 30 per game. So let's look at that. Let's look at defense and three-point shooting this year and see if he kind of lived up to that promise and lived up to those expectations that he put upon himself. Defensively, the Kings had a 110.8 defensive rating this season, which is 18th in the league. So the bottom half of the league. And remember, defensive rating, the higher that it is, the worse that it is. Average is 100. So they're 10.8 points above average, or rather below average defensively. And again, 18th in the league this season. Last season, under Dave Yeager, the Kings had an identical defensive rating of 110.8. However, that was 21st. So the defensive rating between the Kings under Yeager and the Kings under Walton didn't change that much. And I would argue that Walton had an overall better defensive lineup and a better group of defensive-minded players than Dave Yeager had. However, technically, you could say that the Kings improved defensively because they weren't as bad compared to the rest of the league this year on defense as they were the year before. But that's getting really technical. The big thing there that jumps off the page is the fact that the defensive rating is the exact same from last season to this season, 110.8. Let's look at opponent shooting percentage. This season, the Kings gave up an opponent shooting percentage of 46.8. So opponents came in and shot an average of 46.8% per game against the Kings this season. That's number 20 in the league. Not good. They shot 35%, opponents did, from three-point range against the Kings, which is tied for 14th. So a little bit better. Technically, they're in the upper half of the league there. So better three-point shooting defense, but still gave up too high of a shooting percentage overall. Last season, actually, defensively, that team was a little bit better in terms of opponent field goal percentage, as in 2018-2019, Kings opponents shot 46.6% compared to this year's 46.8, but that was also 20th in the NBA. And opponents shot 34.7% from three-point range compared to 35% this year, which was tied for 11th in the 2018-2019 season. So shooting percentage-wise, teams shot better against the Kings under Luke Walton than they did under Dave Yeager. That's eye-opening to me. Now let's switch gears and look at the offensive rating for the Sacramento Kings last season under Yeager and this season under Luke Walton. This season, the Kings had a 109 offensive rating, which is 19th in the league. So bottom half in the league there. However, it's 9 points above average. The higher the offensive rating, the better. So at least that's positive. Last season, under Dave Yeager, the Kings' offensive rating was 109.6, so just barely better, and that was good for 17th in the league. So even when the Kings won 39 games, their offensive rating was still just 17th in the NBA. In 2019-2020, the Kings had a true shooting percentage of 56.3%. 58% of their baskets came off of assists. That's under Luke Walton. The season before, under Dave Yeager, the Kings' true shooting percentage actually dipped a little bit to 55.4%, but their assisted baskets are up 0.8% to 58.8. That's baskets coming off of assists. So the ball movement was slightly better with Dave Yeager, but the shooting percentage slightly better with Luke Walton. Ultimately, these are really, really close, which you can say one of two things. One, that can say that Luke Walton wasn't that much worse than Yeager, and if Walton had maybe a little bit more success and healthy players, he would have had numbers better than the Kings under Yeager, which means theoretically that the Kings should be winning on average around the same amount of games, 39 games, maybe even more, which 39 games this year probably, actually definitely, would have gotten the Kings into the playoffs in the eighth seed. However, it also shows that Luke Walton, for the most part, did not improve on Dave Joerger. On top of that, in a lot of ways, the team got worse, even though they added a lot of good pieces. But again, massive asterisk there because of the injuries that the Kings have had. And we're going to look at that. How much of an excuse really is that? How much credit do you give Walton and the Kings for working through those injuries? And how much is that a crutch, a get-out-of-jail-free card that we're playing a little too much on their behalf? Finally, let's look at three-point shooting percentages and the amount of three-pointers the Kings shot under Luke Walton compared to Dave Joerger. This season, 2019-2020, the Kings shot 36.4% from three-point range as a team. That's 11th in the NBA, and they took on average 34.7 threes per game, which is the 11th most in the NBA. Remember, Luke Walton's target number was around 30-31 per game. He got that all the way up to 34.7, so the Kings were shooting a much higher volume of threes compared to head coach Dave Joerger, and the Kings only shooting 39.9 three-pointers per game, so right on the cusp of that 30, which is good for 20th in the league. However, the Kings had the fourth best three-point shooting percentage as a team under Dave Joerger, shooting 37.4%. So let's look at the bad and then the good of Luke Walton's season or partial season at the helm of the Kings. The bad: the Kings' pace dropped significantly, and we know how important pace was to Dave Joerger's success the season before. Overall, it looked like a reset for the Kings compared to the season before. When we were all hoping that they would build on that momentum, instead it looked like the Kings hit the refresh button or the reset button and kind of started from step one, having a new head coach. It didn't look like he picked up where he left off. It looked like he came in, changed things, and the Kings once again slightly started over. I wouldn't say the identity was lost, but it definitely faded a little bit. And I talked a lot here on the Locked On Kings podcast before the start of the 2018-2019 season. I talked about how important it was that this team discover what their identity is and establish that identity. That is step one to them becoming a good basketball team. And they did establish that identity as a fast-paced, run-you-out-of-the-gym team. That identity, again, isn't completely gone, but it's faded and changed under head coach Luke Walton, and that, to me, is not a good thing. There was a lot of inconsistency, even beyond the injuries this year, for the Kings. A lot of inconsistency of the team playing really well in stretches and then playing bad in stretches. They would have two or three really, really good games against good teams, and then they would have games like the Detroit Pistons game against a bad team in Detroit on the road when they would look like they didn't even care. A lot of inconsistency, especially for a team that's not that young. They have young stars, but overall, the age of the team, not that young. A lot of veterans on this roster. You should be able to work your way through that. Also, Walton, to me, seemed a little bit stubborn when it came to complementing his player strengths. Best example I can give of that is continuing to have Buddy Hield try and be a primary ball handler and have him bring the ball up the floor at times to give Fox opportunity to work off the ball. I understand why you're trying to do it, and I understand if you want more out of Buddy Hield and more out of your two guard to be able to handle the basketball, but that's not Buddy Hield's strength. The last two seasons before this year under Dave Joerger, Buddy Hield really emerged as one of the best catch-and-shoot players in the NBA. Use that to your advantage, and it feels like Luke Walton tried to get too cute and move away from that at times. But now let's look at the good that Luke Walton was able to do this year. I'm not going to give him all the credit for this, but he deserves some of the credit for De'Aaron Fox continuing to improve. And the credit that I do give Luke Walton there is that he allowed Fox to have full control. And he said it from day one: De'Aaron Fox is the head of our snake. He is going to take us as far as we are going to go. So we are going to give him full control and full power. And also Luke Walton challenged him to kind of step up as a leader. And Fox has done that really, really well this season. I've been very pleased with Fox taking that next step in his progression towards that superstar that the Kings need when they need a big shot at the end of a game, or they need someone just to take over and lead them, put the team on their back. De'Aaron Fox is turning into that guy. The three-point volume and overall half-court defense did improve in a way. You're looking at the numbers, and there's not drastic improvement. In some ways, it actually got worse statistically. But looking at the team overall, I would say their identity in half-court defensive sets improved. I'd say offensively, half-court-wise, it did get better compared to Dave Yeager. That's where the team ran out of steam a lot at the end of the 2018-2019 season when teams started adjusting and making sure the Kings couldn't get out in fast break. They would get into half-court offensive sets, wouldn't really know what to do, and that's why they struggled to win games towards the end of that year. Overall, offensively, half-court offense has improved. That's based off statistics and mostly based off of the eye test. And then, of course, the three-point shooting, the volume there has gotten better. The Kings have a lot of really good three-point shooters, and they're letting them fly, which is what you like to see. Another good thing, I could see clear progress from the start of this season to when it ended, even despite the injuries. And that's where we focus a lot on the sustainable winning that Walton has preached and talked a lot about. You're starting to see it's not done by any means, but we've seen flashes and stretches where that winning is sustainable. When the offense isn't there, the defense carries them through. When the defense is struggling, the offense is hitting their shots. That is sustainable winning that Luke Walton has tried to build, because you're never going to shoot 45% every single game, and you're not going to hit 12 to 15 three-pointers a game. Some nights, the shots just aren't going to fall, even if you're having great looks. It happens to every single team. Doesn't matter how good your team is. Every team has a bad shooting night, and defensively, they need to be able to make up for that. And we saw elements of that this season. Again, not where Luke Walton and the Kings want it to be. They still have a long way to go, but at least we saw stretches where the defense was able to carry them through the offensive slumps, and the offense was able to shoot them out of defensive ruts. Finally, we know why Luke Walton was hired. He's a good player's coach, and player relationships and managing personalities is one of the most important things that head coaches can do in today's NBA. And for the most part, it looks like Walton has the complete support and the complete trust of that Sacramento Kings locker room. Of course, you could bring up the Buddy Hield situation, him verbally talking about his frustrations of Walton keeping him out of the game in the fourth quarter, Walton making the decision to move Buddy Hield to the bench and start Bogdan Bogdanovic. But there is enough respect there, and we've heard this from multiple sources, there's enough respect there that Buddy Hield will take that demotion or take that riding the pine from Luke Walton and say, look, I'm not happy with it. I'm going to let you know how I feel, but you're the coach. You make the final decision, and I will do my best in whatever role that I am in. And there's a mutual respect there that is essential between a coach and a player that we haven't really seen in Sacramento for quite some time. So those are the good things that Luke Walton has done. So here we go. How much do we really blame the injuries this season? And I'm going to want your input on this. Send it to me at MattGeorgeKHDK on Twitter or email me mgeorge@saclocalmedia.com. To me, you have to take the injuries into account with basically everything you're looking at this season. However, there are still a lot of areas that I look at this team and I go, even completely healthy, this would be concerning to me. Pace is one of them. Consistency is another one, although I could argue that the Kings were inconsistent because their lineups were inconsistent. I really am curious to see what this team will look like and what they would have looked like, even with Dwayne Dedmon here, what they would have looked like if Marvin Bagley didn't get hurt in the first game of the season. How would that group have worked? Could Dwayne Dedmon and Marvin Bagley have worked really, really well together? Because on paper, it makes sense. You put Dedmon on the perimeter to hit outside shots. You move Marvin Bagley in the pick and roll with De'Aaron Fox. It makes sense, but they didn't really get too much opportunity to do that. Actually, that I want to go really quickly, step back, and give one more good to Luke Walton. Luke Walton made solid adjustments when he recognized players were stepping up. Moving Buddy Hield to the bench, I think, was an absolutely solid adjustment and tough decision. But the best one was moving Rashawn Holmes into the starting lineup and keeping him there, because Rashawn Holmes has thrived. Moving Rashawn Holmes in and taking Dwayne Dedmon out was a tough move, especially when you signed both of them to contracts during the summertime, and one was making a crap ton more money than the other. But that was the absolute right move, so I give Walton credit for that. Injury-wise, this team does have a legitimate excuse. However, I'm not confident in saying that even 100% healthy, the Kings would have matched the 39 wins, which in that case means that there's still obvious regression here. So I don't know. I don't want to answer the question with a big question mark and not pick a side and fence sit. I guess I'm leaning more towards I'm still disappointed even with the injuries, even taking that context into account. Luke Walton will not have much time next year with a healthy roster to stumble and make mistakes. Meaning, if the Kings are completely healthy for the first 20 games of next season, and they start 5-15, 6-14, 7-13, that's not going to look good, and I think Luke Walton's seat is going to get a little hot, as will Vlade Divac's seat. So even though it might be an excuse for them this year, and might be an excuse for Walton this year, all those injuries that he had, he's not going to have a lot of time with a completely healthy team next year to screw up and to figure things out before the threat of being fired starts creeping up on him. Those are my thoughts, and that's my performance evaluation on Luke Walton as a whole. Again, let me know what you think at MattGeorgeKHDK on Twitter, or you can email me, mgeorge@saclocalmedia.com. Went long there. We do still have to get to the best game from the 2014-2015 Sacramento Kings season, so this podcast episode is just going to be a long one, but I'm hoping that is not a bad thing for you. Today's episode of the Locked On Kings podcast is brought to you by Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar ever. Built Bars are tasty. It's a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. 16 amazing flavors, 8 chocolate nut flavors, and 8 chocolate nut-free flavors. The bars are covered in 100% chocolate. They are soft and easy to chew. I shared this last time. I'm really not a protein bar guy, although looking at me, I probably should be eating multiple protein bars a day. However, they sent us a box of these bars for us just to try them out, and immediately we blew through that box. My wife and I were munching on them as much as we could. We immediately had to order more, and now I can officially say I found a protein bar that I love. Check this out, though. These Built Bars are incredibly healthy. They're great for the health-conscious guy or girl. You can lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. Bars are low-calorie, low-sugar, but high-protein and high-fiber. Let me give you an example. A flavor profile here for peanut butter brownie. 20 grams of protein, 170 calories, 3 grams of sugar, 3 grams of net carbs. How about another one? Mint brownie, 15 grams of protein, 110 calories, 4 grams of sugar, 5 grams of net carbs. Now, how many of you have had some kind of bar or snack that says it's flavored like something, but it isn't really? It's just maybe close. I'm telling you, mint brownie is what you get when you have a mint brownie Built Bar. Peanut butter brownie is what you get when you have a peanut butter brownie Built Bar. It tastes exactly as advertised. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON, all one word, LOCKEDON, and you'll get $10 off of your first order. Promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON, all one word, for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. The 2014-2015 Sacramento Kings season was a roller coaster for fans. What ended up being another dreary losing year started off with optimism and success that captured everyone's attention around the league. Head coach Mike Malone and the Kings had managed to convince Rudy Gay to sign an extension with the team and continue the Gay-DeMarcus Cousins 1-2 punch here in Sacramento. The three of them, Malone, Cousins, and Gay, seemed to be completely on the same page, which if you were around for the entire DeMarcus Cousins era in Sacramento, you would know how big of a deal that was to have Cousins and a coach and his primary teammate on the same page. The Kings opened up the season with a loss at home to the Golden State Warriors, but from that point on, they caught fire. They had a 103-94 win over the Portland Trailblazers. 98-92 win over the LA Clippers, back-to-back wins over the Denver Nuggets, 110-105 in Denver, and then 131-109 in Sacramento. With a 4-1 record to start the season, Sacramento headed to Phoenix for their first meeting with the Suns on November 7th. The Kings starting five, Darren Collison, Ben McLemore, Rudy Gay, Jason Thompson, and, of course, DeMarcus Cousins. Phoenix's starting five, Eric Bledsoe, Goran Dragic, Marcus Morris, Markieff Morris, and Miles Plumlee, and also Isaiah Thomas, former Sacramento King, who was just traded to Phoenix, was coming off of the bench. This game was dramatic, it was back and forth, it was full of drama, flared tempers, an edge-of-your-seat action game from start to finish. It would take not one, but two overtimes for a winner to be crowned, as the Sacramento Kings, even with DeMarcus Cousins fouling out in the fourth quarter, managed to steal the win and start the season 5-1.
Sessions, high floater, draws the foul in transition, and he scores. Maybe that'll help his confidence a little bit. Ramon Sessions has had a nightmarish start to this season in terms of scoring. 2-for-17 from the field coming into this game. Just over a minute to play. Bad pass, deflected, steal, Dragic, end-to-end run, layup, just like that. Kings have given up 34 points in the first quarter, and Michael Malone just slumps back on the media table. He is disgruntled, to say the least. Isaiah Thomas, the former King, is on the floor to start the second quarter. He makes his first appearance in the ballgame, and oh, has he been looking forward to this chance. And what does he do? Bad pass, turnover. Sessions with a steal. Sessions with the Euro step to the rack, scores it, and the Kings trying to get back in it, down by 7 at 36-29. So Isaiah turned it over. Shot partially deflected. Rudy Gay got a hand on, I think, or might have been Jason Thompson. Here's Rudy in transition. Spots up for three. He's got the triple. Oh, is that big for Sacramento. And Rudy Gay, with his eighth three-pointer in 13 attempts this season, makes it 52-49. A couple of quick dribbles. Right wing feed to Rudy. Enters now to Cousins, low post right. Spins, draws a double, triple team, goes reverse and scores. What a sequence for DeMarcus Cousins. That's his toughest bucket by far of the night, with three defenders all around him. 15 points now to go with nine boards for Cousins. Oh, what a move in traffic. Dragic, and boy, that is big. Phoenix has now equaled their biggest lead of the contest. They're up by 11 at 86-75. Great opportunity now for Sacramento to get a momentum shift. Stutter step, Collison drives left all the way through. High glass, he scores the bucket. Timeout taken by Phoenix, and the Kings are right back to a two-possession game at 94-90. I was watching Collison skip his way toward the bench, just nodding his head up and down, saying, yes, we are back in the ballgame. Now's the time you got to really suck it up. Here's Rudy Gay working straight away. Throws to the right wing to Landry. Landry has a notion. Shoots from 21. He scores the bucket. It's 96-96. 3:33 to go. And we are deadlocked for a fourth time in this ball game. Back out to Gay on the right wing. Dumps right corner. Entry pass to Cousins inside. He's fouled. He's got position. He scores the basket. A three-point opportunity for DeMarcus Cousins. And what a great seal he set down inside. And I love seeing Nick Stauskas fired up as he slams into Cousins, encouraging him as he goes to the free throw line. Bounds to Cousins. Crowded by Tucker. Top of the arc. Gives to, oh, we got a whistle and an offensive foul. It's on Cousins. And across the way, Michael Malone just stamping his feet in frustration. And Cousins has fouled out of the ball game. Well, DeMarcus committed a turnover on the last possession that denied the Kings a chance. This time, the turnover also results in him being expelled. It's his sixth foul, and so his night is complete with 25 points, a season-high 18 rebounds. Now an opportunity. Boy, Cousins is restraining Michael Malone. Malone wanted to go out after one of the officials, and Boogie Cousins just wrapped up the coach and almost picked him up off his feet and carried him over here toward the bench. They wheel one, two options. They go to Morris, baseline. He's wide open. He misses. Plumlee had a rebound opportunity. The ball slipped through his hands. It's grabbed by Jason Thompson. Difference of 7 seconds on the shot clock. That should have been a Phoenix lead, but the ball slipped through Plumlee's hands, and he was wide open off the missed shot by Morris. Here's Morris with the ball knocked loose. Collison with a steal. Breakaway opportunity. Being chased up the floor. Misses the layup. He went to the rim and he was shadowed all the way and he couldn't convert. Michael Malone applauds the effort. What a great job by Collison to get the breakaway chance, but he was unable to finish. Had he been able to finish, the Kings would have had the lead. Now a timeout taken. Dribble handoff to Rudy Gay. Shakes right, goes left. In the air, dumps to the corner. McLemore for three. He's got the triple. A one-point game. 112-109. Ben McLemore has 15, and the Kings make just their third three-pointer in 15 attempts. Minute 10 to go. Spins baseline. Here's the launch. There it is. Rudy Gay puts the Kings on top. 113-112. Only the fifth field goal made by Gay, and it came on his 21st shot attempt of the night. Tucker steps to the left corner for three. It's off the iron. A one bouncer, no good. It's tracked down. Quick putback. Morris, no good. Chased, not in time. Kings get the win. Caspi, Landry leading the charge onto the floor. Some exhausted Kings have started this season 5-1. And they have now won their first three road games of the year.
Fantastic call there by the legendary radio announcer, the G-Man Gary Gerald for the Sacramento Kings, that audio courtesy of the Kings Radio Network. Even with Cousins fouling out, the big man still provided a team-high 25 points and 18 rebounds in the win. Rudy Gay added 11 points of his own. Darren Collison provided 16 points. For Phoenix, Isaiah Thomas played only 17 minutes off the bench, and he scored just 3 points on 1-of-4 shooting. But I want to go back to G-Man's call of DeMarcus Cousins fouling out with less than a minute in the fourth quarter remaining. Gary Gerald describes Mike Malone coming out onto the court to argue for Cousins, who was called for the offensive foul and sent to the bench. Cousins, who had clashed with every single Kings coach before Malone, grabbed Mike and brought him back to the bench so he wouldn't be called for a technical foul that would have resulted in free throws for the Suns and potentially cost the Kings the game. As most, if not all of you know, after that 5-1 start, Cousins went down with a severe illness, viral meningitis, that held him out for a significant period of time. While he was out, Sacramento's hot start turned into an 11-13 record. After a 95-90 loss to the Pistons on December 13th, Mike Malone was abruptly fired by then-general manager Pete D'Alessandro. The organization claimed that they had higher expectations, which is why they decided to move on. That, of course, began the downward spiral that ended up in Ty Corbin's short, pathetic, unfortunate reign as the interim head coach, followed by the absolute disaster that was George Karl at the helm of the team. But even more than that, firing Malone was a slap in the face to both Rudy Gay, who mainly decided to stay in Sacramento because of Malone, and also a slap in the face to DeMarcus Cousins, who finally had found a coach that he respected and that he felt respected him. Honestly, I am not over-exaggerating when I tell you that watching this game again and reliving the Mike Malone firing was more difficult for me than watching the 2002 playoffs again. I found myself getting more angry remembering 2014 than when the Kings were screwed out of an NBA championship. Maybe it's because that instead of being screwed in 2014, the Sacramento Kings screwed themselves. I blame that move, firing Mike Malone, for the Kings still not making it to the playoffs since 2006. I blame that move for DeMarcus Cousins never working out in Sacramento. I blame that move for fueling fan frustration to its absolute peak, where so many today, almost 6 years later, are still fed up and they're tired of the failure. I agree 100% with Rudy Gay. When the Kings made that move, they condemned themselves to basketball hell. Make no mistake about it, the Kings were finally on the right path. Mike Malone would have coached that team to the playoffs without a doubt in my mind, even with Cousins missing so much time with his illness. Now look at Mike Malone, thriving in Denver with the Nuggets. He has completely turned that franchise around. Meanwhile here, the Kings still sit with the longest tenured playoff drought, the laughingstock of the NBA desperately clinging onto De'Aaron Fox and Marvin Bagley, begging these young stars to finally rescue the organization from their horrible decision back in 2014. You know, these best games of every single season from 2010 to 2020 are supposed to be a positive and uplifting thing. And that 5-1 start was fun. And that double overtime win in Phoenix was great. But remembering Mike Malone being fired and how that has set this organization, set this team so far back, it just fueled up some old anger, frustration, and even some hatred in some sense inside me. So I thank you for bearing with me as I got on my soapbox there and relived those tough memories. Hopefully the Kings are working their way to a better spot. And ultimately, once the Kings finally do make the playoffs, we'll finally be able to put all of that behind us. But it is still too raw and too real, even though it was almost 6 years ago. Hard to believe it's been nearly 6 years since that whole circus took place. I want your thoughts on that Mike Malone situation. I want your thoughts on that double overtime win. Do you remember that game? How did you feel when the Kings started that season 5-1? And then how did you feel at 11-13 when the Kings let Malone go? What about your thoughts overall on Luke Walton, his performance evaluation? How much of an excuse are the injuries for the Kings this year and for their struggles? Is it too much of a get-out-of-jail-free card and a scapegoat for this organization, do you think? Or is there a legitimate reason to keep bringing it up? You let me know. At @MattGeorgeKHDK on Twitter. Email me mgeorge@sacklocalmedia.com. We have more performance evaluations, and I have the best game from the 2015-2016 season coming for you tomorrow, so I hope you will join me for that. Until then, my name is Matt George. Thank you so much for listening to the Locked On Kings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Kings, your daily Sacramento Kings podcast.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.